All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started. Today's going to go quick. It's Monday. We're just doing an hour today. So let me check questions. Looks like you might be able to squeeze in. If you press one on your phone right now, we might be able to get to you here in this hour. So let's go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. And I think today, since we only have an hour, we're just going to jump right in and get right to your calls and questions. Let's get started in Minnesota. Tammy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I spoke with you yesterday, but I still had a question about that statin that I told you was on, that I've been on. And my LDL is 166 and my HDL is 79. Do you think it would be okay for me to go off of that?
I think it's okay for everybody to go off statins. Really, when you know, there's so many problems with this issue. Let's start with the fact that we have totally screwed up cholesterol for decades. You know, for 40 years, the government told us you shouldn't eat more than 300 milligrams of cholesterol a day. And that's like an egg and a half. Now, and they did this quietly, they didn't make any big deal about it. That 300 milligram limit, which had been around forever, they dropped completely and said dietary cholesterol is nothing to be concerned about, and now there's no limit. You know, that's just insane to go from a limit of that low all those years and then say, oops, eat as much as you want. It really doesn't matter. That's the first problem. The second problem is the way we read cholesterol is completely wrong. Total cholesterol is meaningless. We shouldn't even use the number for anything, yet that is the number that they use to put somebody on a statin. If we look at women, especially over 40, even more so over 50, the higher their total cholesterol, the longer they live. That's been correlated many, many times. We shouldn't even look at the number, but if we did, we would find that the higher it is for, and for men, it's the same way, but it's an even stronger correlation for women, that the higher their total cholesterol, the longer they will live. Then we have to look at, it's the ratios that are important, not each individual number. So just, I didn't calculate it, but just listening to your ratio, I think your ratio would probably come in almost ideal. And yeah, I don't think you should be on the statin at all.
Okay, I just have one more question. Can you give me a website that will give me correct information when I'm looking for medical information?
I have several. Most of the websites that I belong to for medical information are actually subscription services. And that's one of the ways I know I'm controlling the quality, because there's a lot of really, really bad information out there that looks good. When it comes to things like diabetes and high fat, low carb, there's a ton of good information on dietdoctor.com. The one that I use for research is called greenmedinfo.com. And you can learn a lot there free. I have a subscription, so I have access to all their reporting. That's one that I like. Another one that I actually like a lot is Mercola.com.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much for the information. I really appreciate you.
You're welcome. One more I'll give you. Dr. Axe, A-X-E. He's got some great stuff as well. Let's go to Texas. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind today?
Well, I've got two quicker questions. One is about a charge air cooler. I recently tested my charge air cooler in the truck I'm driving and pressured it up to 25 pounds, and it leaked out 5 pounds in 10 seconds.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, it was easy to hear and easy to feel as well.
Yeah, that's a full-blown leak. I've seen, with the leak that bad, I have seen fuel mileage loss as much as a half mile per gallon.
Okay, because that was going to be kind of my question. We have seen a fuel mileage loss of roughly that much on this truck, and that's
yep.
kind of what I thought it was going to be. I just wanted to confirm.
Yeah, that's what I would expect. It doesn't always, it's not always that bad, but I have seen it. That's a full-blown leak there. That's not just a little leak. And I've seen about a half mile per gallon, so my guess is that's exactly what's going on with your truck.
All right. My other question was, you and the boys in Pittsburgh were talking one day, and you mentioned the effects on your brain with when you have a great running high horsepower truck, and you said they released 3, maybe 4 chemicals in your brain, and that combination was more addictive than cocaine, you were saying. And I was curious where this research was, where I could research it, and where the sources are.
You know, the reference to being more addictive to any drug is, and the reason is, almost all drugs that make you feel good, the way that they work is by releasing those same chemicals. So, you know, you take in the drug, whether it's cocaine or heroin or whatever it is, and then your body starts producing, I just drew a blank on the chemicals that I was looking for. Serotonin is one, oxytocin is another. There are several. That's what makes your body feel good. The problem is you keep taking more and more, and your body keeps producing more and more, and pretty soon it burns out and it can't produce it anymore. But that's really the reference, is that there are certain actions, things we can do that produce those chemicals. There are foods we eat that can produce those chemicals. And then there are drugs. Now, where you would go to find, you know, I can't think of one specific report. It's just hundreds of things I've read over the years. If you were to look up like feel good neurotransmitters, you would come up with some articles about those kinds of things. Like, again, serotonin, norepinephrine. There's a whole slew of brain chemicals that control our feelings. And that's where the drugs come in, because they make our body release those. That's also why we have huge withdrawal symptoms from going off many of those drugs, because your body stops producing its own chemicals because you've been taking so many in. And then when you stop, and your body's no longer producing them, that's why you feel so bad. I wouldn't take that comparison all that seriously. We were kind of joking in a way, but there is some truth behind how that works. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. You talked me in and out of a lot of things over the years that I've been listening to. And I pulled the trigger on Landstar about 8 months ago, bought a glider. I finally got the truck where it's running well. And now I'm in a position where I think I'm ready to buy a trailer. So I'm looking at profit gauges, and I'm wondering, right now, I'm at $1.31 a mile, which is low, but I've been pulling for a customer indirectly where I finally met him at a trade show, and the guy asked me for a business card, and I kind of didn't have one, so I didn't know what to say, but he put me in touch with an agent because he wants to use me regularly now with just the tractor, I think I'd be about $1.45 a mile minimum. So
okay.
I'm wondering, with a trailer, that would probably put me at about $1.51, $1.52 a mile, and I'll be pulling a lot of his freight, and he's hooking me up with two other customers that he wants me to pull for. At $1.51, I'm thinking that's a good enough rate to go ahead and pull the trigger on a trailer. What do you think?
Yeah, and let me, I'm going to put you on hold because we're coming up on a break and I don't want to rush this answer. So I'm going to carry you through and then we'll come back. And first off, congratulations on having the numbers. That makes answering questions so much easier. It makes decisions so much easier. We're not guessing. You have your numbers and we'll talk about that when we get back. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm talking with Dave in Pennsylvania. So, Dave, here's the interesting thing over at Landstar, and I've worked in their system for a long time, helped a lot of people with this issue. And the interesting thing about this question is it really doesn't matter. I just talked about numbers, and it's great to have them. Whether you're making $1.30 a mile right now or $1.90, the increase by adding the trailer is always the same. So this is actually a fairly easy question because I've done it so many times. Every single time I've ever calculated this for somebody at Landstar, they're always more profitable with the trailer. The extra money they give you not only covers the cost of the trailer and insurance and maintenance, it leaves a profit. And, you know, rather than pull a company trailer, you go set up your own trailer properly with the right aerodynamics, the smart truck system, good low rolling resistant tires, and pretty soon you're adding a half mile to a gallon or more to your fuel economy as well. And yeah, we could go on and on. There's so many benefits to owning your own trailer, and there's only one downside. The one downside is you can't be in a drop and hook operation over there. You know, yesterday on the show, I actually had a caller who was one of the first who decided not to have his own trailer because he did so much drop and hook and he had accounts that he really liked. But when it comes down to pure numbers, and one of the other things that I've helped people do, this is a great situation to be in, because if you're just not sure if you really want to do it or not, and you're worried, I tell people spend one full quarter, 3 months with a company trailer, just don't ever drop it. Act like it's yours. Don't accept any drop and hook loads. Pretend like the trailer you're hooked to is yours and do not drop it. And see what happens after 3 months.
That's what I did for 2 months, and that's where I'm at $1.31, but that's before this customer was looking to use me more on a regular basis. So I'm happy with
perfect.
That. I just wasn't sure if $1.51 was enough.
Yep, it is. The difference that they, the extra revenue that they give you, I've calculated it a bunch of times. almost half of that is going to be profit.
Okay. And then I spoke to Mike Beckett yesterday. The trailer that I'm looking at is going to be a 2015, about 25 grand. It's a utility. It's in great shape. It's got super singles on it. And I was wondering, I've got a tractor that's got the duals. I just didn't want to do super singles with my first truck. He seems to think that there will be no fuel economy increase super singles all the way around. I know you guys differ on the inflations and stuff.
No, actually on inflation, we're usually pretty close. We just do it for different reasons. He likes high pressure for tire wear. I like high pressure for fuel mileage. So most of the time we're right on. We may have a couple differences here and there, but not much. On this one, you know, the pressure thing is an opinion. He, you know, has his reasons. I have mine. We might differ a little here and there. But the statement about wide singles is just plain wrong. I don't care if we put one wide single on a truck, or it doesn't even have to be a wide single. If we change any tire on the truck to a tire that has a lower rolling resistance, there's an improvement. It's just physics. There's no way around it. So you could have a truck with 17 horrible tires rolling resistance. If you put one good one on, there's an improvement. We may not be able to measure it with just one, but it's an improvement. We will burn less fuel. And again, it's just physics. It takes so much energy to make that wheel roll, and you can build a tire that rolls with less energy. And it doesn't mean you have to put all 18 on to get the benefit. As soon as you put one on, there's a change. So, yeah, any time we can lower rolling resistance, whether it's on one axle or everywhere, I would do it.
Okay. So I guess tomorrow I'll sign the paperwork on the trailer, then you just talked me into it. Question, Mid-America, it looks like you have Let's Truck posted as a having a seminar for an hour. Is that an invitation-only thing, or is that something we can go to?
Actually, I'll be doing four seminars all together throughout the show. So on Thursday, I have one seminar at 10 o'clock in the morning, right when the show opens. I'll be in the truckstop.com booth doing that one. That's open to anybody that wants to come by. On Friday,
get into that because that's the VIP day.
That's interesting.
The regular driver's in at 10 o'clock, so there's no way to get in there.
You know, I forgot all. I didn't set these seminars up. Truckstop.com did. I wonder if they were thinking about that on Thursday. You're right. That's going to be an issue. Not going to have many people in there on Thursday then.
Just the VIP.
Friday. Yeah. Friday, same thing, 10 o'clock in the morning at truckstop.com. I'll be doing a seminar. And then Friday afternoon, this is the one you're probably talking about, 4:15. That's a health seminar, and that one's open. So you just show up, and no invitations, no cost. You just show up. And then Saturday again, 10 o'clock in the morning, right when the show opens at truckstop.com.
Okay. All right. So I'll try and catch that 4:15 Friday, you said?
Yep. 4:15 on Friday, and we'll go until they kick us out because the show will be ending. Let's go to... going to head north of the border. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
What can I help you with today?
I have a question about a family member. It's my son. He's 20-year-old. About the last 8 or 9 months, he's been landing in and out of ERs with gallbladder issues. The latest episode happened yesterday, and it's just a vicious cycle of he goes into the ER, they pump him full of hydration and some other IV medicines, and then he goes back to his family doctor. Now, thankfully, his family doctor is saying it looks like his gallbladder will have to come out, but he's dragging his heels on the issue. So I'm a regular listener of your show, and I know what your thoughts are on that. So I'm just hoping maybe you can offer some advice or suggestions to see if maybe we can manage it.
Yeah. So my advice is that this is a medical issue, and in nutritional therapy, don't deal directly with medical issues. So this has got to be stabilized.
Right.
What I I don't know if I can say this strong enough. I would do everything possible not to lose that gallbladder. Once you lose it, and he's young, he is in for a life of poor health, unless he really manages the way he eats and the supplements and all those things. It's so much better if you can keep the gallbladder. What I would recommend is a second opinion on the gallbladder from either a functional medicine doctor or a naturopath. Both of those have the medical credentials to be able to make sure that there isn't anything life-threatening going on. Because you can die from it. We do have to take this seriously, but it can be avoided. I mean, unless they've got him on the operating table right now saying we have to take it out or he's going to die, if you're ever at that point, you can take it out. But we're not there yet. And I would work really hard to find either a functional medicine doctor or an NO or an ND, which is a naturopathic doctor, so that they can look at him medically and say, yes, there's a problem, but we could use this protocol to start to clear it up and we don't have to take out the gallbladder. Or if they were to say, look, it's too far gone, we do have to take it out. Then I would believe them, and then you just have to do what you have to do. But most traditional doctors are just under the impression that they don't work as hard as they can to save that. They treat it like it's a spare part. And that's, it's just horrible that they are that way. And I'm not saying they're all, you know, doing it out of malice or just because they want to make the money from the surgery. It's just the way they've been trained. It's know that once that gallbladder's gone, it becomes much more difficult to stay healthy.
Yeah, and we're kind of fortunate that nobody's really taken charge. So we are in the process of getting second opinions and whatnot, but I was just wondering in the meantime, like again yesterday he spent 16 hours in ER and has to turn around and work a 12-hour shift today. You know what I mean?
I'm not looking
for a cure from you, but, you know, dietary considerations or supplements.
Well, you know,
stone issue. They're calling it more of like an inflammation. And
So what I would highly recommend is a really, really clean, maybe even an elimination diet for 30 days. And the elimination diets are things like the AIP protocol. You can look up AIP diet. You can look up GAPS diet. You can look up Whole30. Those are all elimination diets. They're really, really clean. They're very restrictive. That's why we don't do them for a long time. But 30 days of an elimination diet, and he's going to see a lot of improvement. As far as supplements, you could use something like a beta TCP that we have, which is liver and gallbladder support. I wouldn't do a lot of supplements right now, but the beta TCP in a really clean elimination diet can go a long way towards fixing the inflammation. Maybe all he needs. We'll be right back. Stick around. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. We are off to Georgia. Landon, welcome to the program.
Hello. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, what's on your mind today?
I'd like you to take a look at an oil sample. Tell me if anything to be concerned about.
All right, so we've got a Series 60. What year is it?
01.
Okay. No, actually looks pretty good. Looks like 1.1 million on the engine. How much time on the oil itself?
107,000.
Okay, I just wanted to verify that. No, actually, it looks like a really good sample for 100+ thousand miles. I can't find anything wrong with it at all. You know, they have fuel dilution flagged at 2.3. That's no big deal. Lead at 34, but it's actually coming down from the last time. So looks really good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this sample at all.
Good. Well, the thing that had me just questioning a little bit when they flagged the fuel dilution, because I have a rough idle that, you know, when it's sitting there, especially after it's warmed up, the minute you put a load on it or speed it up, it smooths right out. So I was trying to decide, is it a injector problem or is it just the nature of the beast or what's happening?
Well, you
there?
Know, it, that here's the thing. With the new way they measure fuel dilution, which is really, really sensitive, we've been saying for a long time that 2 is the new 0. And you're only at 2.3.
Okay.
Very minimal. We don't really start looking at fuel dilution as a problem till it gets to about 4.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Good to know. All right. Yeah, it's one of those rare 14-liter pre-EGR, so I'd kind of like to keep it running as long as I can.
Yeah, and it looks like it's running really good.
All right. Good. And I got a question about the NutriQ recommendations and what I've been running into there, and kind of wondering if I need to change something or if I'm on the right track.
This is a really good looking NutriQ. Your digestion is you're scoring very low on digestion, which is excellent. We hardly ever see that. Sugar handling couldn't be any better. Maybe you need a little help in essential fatty acids, nothing major. Mm-hmm. Pituitary scoring a little high. I may keep an eye on that. But most of what I see here is actually really good. So it seems to me like you are on the right track.
I got the optimal EFA caps. So I'm taking that with the meals and the beta TCP and the Hydrazyme. And that's the one is that one where you test it, you take one and then another one until you feel a burning sensation. And I wasn't expecting that to be, you know, very difficult, but the test meal that I did it to start with, I was up to 7 and I still wasn't feeling any burning sensation and I was done with the meal. So I thinking, wonder what, if that's right or not. So later I've just kind of been backing off a little bit, but then it said something about if you feel a warming sensation sometime after the meal, maybe you don't have enough. So I'm kind of not sure where I'm at on that.
Yeah, every now and then we run across somebody that hits 7 and they can't feel it. And we just tell them, take 6 or so in the beginning, but you can start to taper off because this is one of those things that is going to improve itself. And eventually you'll be able to stop completely. And you may be getting close because your digestion scores are showing really well. So I think the Hydrazyme and the beta TCP are already improving. You may want to go through one more bottle of each one, and then you can probably quit those. As long as you keep your diet good, that once digestion fixes itself, and it looks like yours is, as long as you keep your diet clean, then you don't need to take those after a while.
Yeah. Well, I know about a year and a half ago, I got real. I mean, I've always been interested in health, but I realized that the Mountain Dew I was drinking wasn't working, or, you know, it was working against me. And especially since I'm driving long distance now, I don't get as much exercise as I used to. So I really cleaned up my diet. And it's at first I wasn't too excited about your health talks, but now I'm enjoying it a lot. So I'm glad you pursued that.
Good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate the feedback. Let's head off to West Virginia. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. One is something I read on Dr. McCullough's. I get his email, but at the beginning, my first question is this. I have my own authority, and I have a friend of mine who runs his own operation with his own authority, but he ran into a family problem, and he had to go out of the country, spend there longer than he had anticipated, and he could not maintain not working and paying the insurance, so naturally that got canceled, and I think they revoked his operating authority. So when he came back, he was able to fix all that, and he has started working again. But he's running into this problem where I think once your authority is revoked, when they reinstated it, it's as if it's new again. And so when he is calling on some of these brokers, they're saying that his authority is too young, and they cannot give him these some of the loads. And he was asking me to help him out. And so my question to you is, if I booked a load for him, I'm not taking any money, I'm not double brokering it, and he was running under my authority, he said that so long as I am added as an additional insured on his policy, I am covered. So my question to you is it that simple really, or am I missing something? In case something goes wrong, and I'm not going to be doing this full time, I'm just going to help him from time to time when he gets into this problem.
Yeah, this is sounding a little convoluted to me. What he said could be true as long as all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed properly, then yes, that statement could be true. The only thing that's really going to change for him is time and building relationships. Here's the thing. When you've got either young authority or it's been revoked and he has both, that does look a little questionable. And the last thing you want to be doing is calling a new broker over and over, you know, always. And this is the way a lot of people operate. They just get on the boards. They find what load they think looks best and they call the broker.
Right.
Well, in case you don't want to be, because you're going to deal with this issue over and over. What you want to do is find a couple of brokers, even maybe sit down and explain to them why it was revoked and why it's young, and build that relationship and pull for just a couple brokers right now. That way you don't have to try to re-explain over and over. And once the broker sees that, once the broker sees that you're doing a good job, then they won't care about this anymore. And pretty soon you'll be past this and it won't be young authority anymore. And it won't be a big deal. But as far as the insurance, just make sure everything's done properly. Everybody's listed on the certificates and then you'll be fine. Let's go to North Carolina. Stacy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Enjoy the show. Thanks for taking my call. I was, I heard you talk in the past about starting your business around the first of the year, and I've got some money saved up for a truck, and I was wondering if there's any implications in buying a truck within the next couple of months, just having it set around.
Not at all. And I think the confusion may come in. The only thing I say to try to do at the beginning of the year is switching to a corporation. It's much easier to do that at the beginning of the year. Starting a business, hell, I don't care if you start it in December. Really doesn't matter. Okay. So any time during the year that you're ready is the right time. So if you get ready, you do all the right stuff, it doesn't matter what time of the year it is. That's when you pull the trigger and go. I'm going to get to the break. I'm going to come back to you, make sure that answered your question. Stick around. be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. Stacy, does that help?
Yes, it does. Yes.
Okay. Anything else I can help you with?
No, that was it. I appreciate it.
Perfect. You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Tennessee. Mike, welcome to the program.
Love your show, Kevin. I'm so glad that I get a chance to listen to you, and I appreciate all you do for guys like me. Hey, I got this noise. I cannot find out what it is and where it is. As I'm going down the road like right now, pulling, you know, empty or just pulling on the truck, the throttle going, I don't really hear much. As I back off the throttle, I got this whining noise. It's not real high-pitched. But it's a wee, you know. And if I take it out of gear, the noise goes away. If I get back on the fuel, the noise goes away. I've been underneath this thing. I've pulled the diff plugs. I've checked all my fluids. I've checked my height on my air suspension. I just can't seem to figure it out.
How many miles are on the truck?
About a million and a half.
How long have you owned it?
About 5 years.
I would pull oil samples on the transmission and the differentials, and let's just see what's going on in there. You know, with this many miles, it's a good idea to pull them anyway, just to see what's going on. So I would start there. That's pretty inexpensive troubleshooting.
Yeah.
As the crankshaft
I'm the fellow from San Antonio who had Volvo do my in-frame after my injector deal.
Oh, is this a Volvo?
Remember me or not? This is a Volvo, yeah.
Volvo engine. That. Oh, you can't replace the crankshaft damper. They're internal on that engine.
Yeah, they're in the back, right?
Yeah, it's almost impossible to get to them. It's not like most engines where it's external and it's right on the front and it's just you unbolt it, bolt a new one on. So that's not going to work. I would start, with a million plus, a noise like that could be all kinds of things. And noises are always hard because we hear them different, we describe them different. But yeah. I would start by pulling an oil sample, and let's see if there's anything obviously wrong with those three components. Hold on a second. I cut you off there. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, I enjoy when you have Bruce on the show, and I did some watching his YouTube stuff a little bit. Does he do anything for Volvos yet?
No, and I kind of doubt that they ever will. They looked into it, and it turns out that had to buy like $10,000 two pallet loads full of tools just to work on that engine.
It's a shame.
Yeah, and for them, there's just not enough of them around that they would ever make their money back. And it's not only the money to buy the tools, it's the training, it's the inventory, it's a lot to take on for an engine that just isn't popular enough. So it is a shame. Let's go to Georgia. Roxanne, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call today. I have a quick question. I just became an owner operator a couple months ago, around the first of the year, with a major carrier, and I don't get paid a whole heck of a lot right now, but to me, I look at it that it's a stepping stone, and my personal cost is so minuscule that I don't have a whole lot of overhead, so I'm okay with that for now. My one question is, my daughter-in-law has a bachelor's in accounting, so I chose her to be my accountant slash bookkeeper, and I'm paying her 5 cents per mile that I drive. Do you think that's fair?
No. I don't.
No? Okay.
Okay. And here's the reason why. I don't even like the word fair to start with, but I don't like this because the number of miles you drive has nothing to do with the amount of work she has to do as an accountant. All of a sudden, the harder you work, the more you have to pay her. That makes no sense.
Right.
So there's a
Well, and I was trying to I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Then I came up with that number because I was sitting here mind boggled by I saw an example sheet of the accountant that the company uses, but I said, well, he's got 1,500 owner operators that he cares for, so he can afford to charge, you know, be paid less per driver. And I'm like, well, what would be a fair price to pay my daughter-in-law?
That's not true. Let me give you an example. If I'm the accountant and I have to do one owner-operator, I base my fee on the time that I'm going to have to put into that client because time is my resource. That's what I'm selling, my time. So whether I have one or 5,000, it doesn't matter. I still have to spend just as much time on each individual client. It's not like when you buy something in bulk. You know, if I buy one of something, there's going to be a certain price. If I commit to buying 10,000 of them, the price will go down. That's a product because we can drive costs down when we produce more. But in a service, and accounting is a service, there's no way to drive down my time by having more clients. I have to commit more time or I have to hire more people. So it's not true that just because she's only doing one, she should get paid more. It should always be based on time. That's why your mileage is a lousy measurement for paying her because it has nothing to do with the time. So what she should say... You should say, look, I've looked at your accounting. I even did the data entry for a couple months, and it's going to take me X number of hours a month. And my time is worth $50 an hour or whatever she believes her value is. And that's how this should be priced based on her time.
And the reason why I say that is because it's so new to both of us. And she's, you know, she doesn't know about the trucking industry. So we're both learning at the same time. And to me, that was like just a starting point. I honestly didn't know pay her. She, you know, and I was like, well, let's start with this. And so, so I'll get back and talk with her about that.
let's do some quick numbers here. I'm going to venture to say that you roughly will drive 100,000 miles this year, right? That's a pretty good guess. It's probably a little more than that, but let's just use 100,000 miles. Now, to give you an idea, our software for accounting, which is drop dead simple, is $19 a month. So that's roughly $240 a year. Our full service accounting, where you don't have to do anything. You send all the receipts to us, and we do all of the accounting, and we do your tax return, is $90 a month. That includes your tax return, plus all of your accounting, and you have to do nothing except send everything to us. It's $90 a month, so we're talking about $1,080 a year, which includes your tax return. So be clear.
See, she won't be doing my taxes.
Exactly. So I'm going to make a comparison. The tax return alone is $500. We're charging you $1,080 to do it all. So we're only charging you less than $600 to do all of your accounting for the whole year. You were about to pay her $5,000 to do it.
Right. Yeah. Wow. And that's funny. Yeah. That could go towards my company.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I have a lot to think about. And I guess I did have another question. I believe it is you that has a yearly seminar to become owner or to learn how to be a profitable owner operator.
Yep.
Could you please inform me when, where, and how much, and what the information or where I need to go to find that information? I couldn't find it.
I'll give you the rough idea, and then I'll tell you exactly where to go. You just call our team. But it's September 22nd this year. It's 5 days long. Start on Monday. We go all the way through Friday. It's a long week with a ton of information.
Wonderful.
It is in Council Bluffs, Iowa, at the Mid-America Center. Super easy to get to with a truck. We have tons of parking. It's roughly $1,800 for a ticket. We have a payment plan, so you can pay about $100 a month. You can sign up right now. The best thing to do is call. We can explain everything to you because I'm all out of time. 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. We can answer your questions about all of that. I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow for the Power Hour and General Questions.